Chapter 27. Lone Warlock. Iridan navigated the back streets of Mune by ether sight. The spring rains had let up sometime after midnight, leaving every surface wet and a light fog hanging amid the stone buildings, but the skies had not cleared. There was scant light to avoid tripping by, and he was not foolish enough to create any for himself. He was playing a game of hide from his lordship with Magrin's occupation forces, but during the nighttime hours, he was not the one who hid. 3 nights running, he had hunted them, leaving corpses and fire-gutted buildings in his wake. It might take him half a season to cleanse the city of enemy troops, but he was determined to see it through. He peered around an ivy-covered wall, using its scraggly source to help conceal his own. There was a patrol on foot, 12 infantry, with one especially strong source among them, which seemed like as not to be a sorcerer. "It seems they are looking for me," Iridan muttered aloud, a habit that was growing the longer he spent alone. Folk who were intent on his demise made for poor conversation, and he could not abide the prolonged silences when he was alone. "Whether they mean to confront me or avoid me, it seems they have not noticed me." The newly regrown teeth felt strange in his mouth, but at least he could speak normally again. Iridan began drawing ether very slowly. It was a simple trick, drawing just enough to offset the ether a source gave off. It was not enough to appear invisible in the ether, but it made it much easier to hide a strong source among weaker ones. For his sword, there was not much he could do, save hope that his adversaries were less vigilant. Dragon's Whisper showed up clearly in the ether, and he had not the talent and illusion to hide that. The patrol was heading away from him, so Iridan slipped from behind his cover, blade drawn and held in one hand. His boots scraped on the cobbled roads and made tiny, wet, sucking splashes where he stepped in the ubiquitous shallow puddles. The soldiers in the patrol were conversing among themselves, however, and were wearing metal armor. The noise Iridan made was drowned out. Iridan quickened his step, knowing that it was only a matter of time before. There was a shout, something in Magrin that Iridan understood by context and not by vocabulary. The soldiers turned, swords drawn. Iridan could only tell the latter by their stance, using ether vision as he was. The patrol, rather than taking up a defensive stance or launching an attack, rushed sidelong, spreading out to either side as if to contain Iridan's escape. "As if I planned to run," Iridan said, muttering to himself as he launched a spread of fiery darts at the Magrin soldiers. "Fire and steel, those are what you kill with. All else is vanity," Rashan had instructed him. "Strike to wound, to maim. Obliterating foes wastes ether. Conserve for your defenses." The lessons had been sinking in now that he had worn himself down over the course of his nightly raids, body and source alike. Many of the darts struck home. A few hit metal armor to little effect, but most caught cloak, hair, or skin. Men screamed, dropping to the wet ground for relief from the fires. A pair of Iridan's magical projectiles had struck a shielding spell that had not been active when the attack was launched. The sorcerer among the Magrin patrol had quick reflexes with his magic. Less concerned about the common soldiers, Iridan was about to launch a more focused attack on the sorcerer when he saw a blade spring to life in the ether. Iridan switched his vision back to the light, seeing through the gap in the fog that his use of fire magic had created. It was still dark, but there was enough light from the burning men to get a view of his opponent. The man wore blue and gold. By his dark skin, he was Safshan. The blade that had drawn Iridan's attention enough to warrant a look in the light was a rune blade, which meant his opponent was a blade priest. The blade priest called out to Iridan. There were several foreign words, which Iridan's education failed to identify as either Magrin or Safshan, but the last was a name, Rashan. Iridan cocked his head to the side, confused. The blade priest must have realized Iridan had not understood him, for he tried again in thickly accented Kadrin. "I am honored by fighting you, Warlock Rashan," the blade priest said, repeating his greeting. Iridan shook his head. The blade priest stiffened, straightening from the ready stance he had eased into after making his challenge. It seemed that Iridan had offended him. Some small, strange, misguided part of Iridan's mind could not allow him to cross blades with the misunderstanding hanging between them. "I am Warlock Iridan Solaran. Rashan is my father," Iridan said by way of clarification. The blade priest's expression turned sour. "Then I will kill you instead, unworthy spawn of evil. I am Suka, and I will wash my blade in your blood," the blade priest said, readying himself once more. The soldiers who had survived Iridan's initial attack made no move to intervene. They had been bait for a trap, but had not caught the quarry they thought they were after. With no further preamble, the blade priest Suka charged Iridan. Suka held his rune blade with a great sword grip, both hands at the end of the elongated handle spaced just a bit apart. Iridan watched his opponent change from a fire-shadowed form obscured by fog to a distinctive blue-white source wielding a blade that shone brightly as he switched back to the ether to ready himself for combat. There was a temptation to unleash an ether blast and see if he could end the fight at once, but Iridan reined in the thought. Tightening his grip on Dragon's Whisper, he strengthened his shielding spell and prepared to meet the charge head-on. Suka's blade hit like thunder against Iridan's parry, sending a jolt through Iridan's arms. In the ether, he saw that the Safshan had put a bit of ether through his muscles just before the blades collided. If not for the magically enhanced speed behind his own sword, Iridan never would have generated enough power to stop the stronger fighter's initial attack. There was no respite for Iridan to digest this information and formulate a strategy. Suka's second slash followed close behind, forcing Iridan to retreat a step as he parried a somewhat less forceful blow and deflected it wide. The blade priest slid one hand up the hilt of his sword as he stepped in to follow Iridan's retreat, reversing the momentum of his weapon faster than Iridan had anticipated. Iridan felt the impact as his shield took a brutal strike that would have bisected his chest had he been wearing armor of steel instead of pure ether. Thoughts of feeling out his opponent and husbanding his ether flew from his mind like leaves before a gale. Instinct took over, and Iridan's ether bolt lifted the blade priest from his feet and deposited him, supine, on the cobblestones some dozen paces distant. Iridan took a moment to catch his breath and renew his shielding spell as he walked over to where Suka had fallen. Iridan had seen the blade priest's shielding spell fail when he hit the ground, after it had done all it could, just stopping Iridan's spell from killing him instantly. With admirable willpower, the wounded Suka drew himself to his feet, using his blade as a crutch, before Iridan arrived. He still held the sword in a ready grip, but Iridan could see that he was merely preparing to give a last accounting of himself before he was defeated. "You will die with a clean blade, my friend," Iridan told him, stopping just outside his reach. The blade priest was probably glaring lightning at him, but it was a hard thing to discern just by ether. He watched as Suka gathered a bit of ether using a draw that would not have gotten him past most of the 15 summer students on ranking day at the Imperial Academy. There was no reappearance of a shielding spell around him, though. The ether flowed to arms and legs. Having seen the blade priest's preparation so clearly in the ether, Iridan was not surprised when Suka leapt at him, taking one last desperate shot at killing him. Iridan suspected his shielding spell could turn the blow aside even if he missed the parry entirely, but he had crossed blades once already and lost to the superior swordsman. Iridan's second ether bolt caught Suka mid-leap and hurled him against the stone wall of a nearby tavern with a crunch that had a note of finality to it. The soldiers who had been watching the encounter saw that it was ended and turned to flee. Iridan sent darts of flame after them, killing all but a pair, whom he did not bother pursuing. Instead, he stalked over to examine the body of his adversary. Close examination was not needed to know the man was dead, but Iridan felt better having a look in the light to make certain. Blood smeared the tavern wall, a place called the Happy Hog by its sign, though it had seen happier times, to be sure. The body of Suka lay crumpled in the small herb garden that was adjacent to the tavern, surrounded by a shin-high brick retaining wall. The rune blade lay just at the base of the wall, in the road, as blood from its former owner ran down the overflowing garden wall to soil it. "I suppose it does not count if it is your blood, does it?" Iridan asked the corpse. He regarded Suka's weapon for a moment, noting the exquisite workmanship, the detailed etching of runes and decorative scrollwork, the gems inlaid in the small crossguard and pommel. The half-blade, half-handle weapon was versatile in the hands of a master, but it took many summers to gain proficiency. Even if Iridan had no better weapon, and he felt that he did, he knew no one who would be of any use with it. Dragon's Whisper came down in a whistling blur, smashing against the rune blade and into the cobblestones beneath it. The rune blade did not shatter, but it was bent beyond use, ruined. Iridan slipped back to ether vision and scanned the area for signs of nearby foes, then set off, no particular destination in mind. With the rush of adrenaline from the battle worn off, Iridan noticed that the Blade Priest's blow had told. It hurt to take a deep breath, likely due to a cracked rib. It was yet another in a long series of minor hurts he had suffered, worse than the ache of an overused source or a turned ankle, but not as bad as Juliana knocking his teeth out. The latter still rankled him. "Some warlock I am, not even master over my own bed," Iridan said to himself. He was getting stronger, he knew. His instincts were being retrained to fight rather than flee or cower. There was no Brannis to save him, as there had been most of his life. He ran his tongue over his new teeth, feeling the odd contours and unfamiliar shape of them in his mouth. He had grown them in too quickly, not taking the time to do a proper job of it. When he was done freeing Mune, barring another pressing task, he would see to reshaping them a bit until they felt right. It was an unmanly hobby, reshaping the body for aesthetic reasons, but he could find plenty of sorceresses who could advise him on it. Brannis's sister Aloysia, his cousin or niece or something, he supposed, was part of the inner circle and could likely be trusted for some discretion on the matter. Her beauty was rather unlikely to be all natural. The thought of asking Juliana was out of the question twofold. Not only was she responsible for the ill-fitting teeth in the first place, but she seemed not to practice such magic herself. Surely the color of her hair was her own doing, but her mother had probably straightened her teeth as a girl, and she was sorely lacking in womanly curves. Iridan did not know if he had the courage to suggest she do something about the latter, else he might be starting over on another new set of teeth. Wandering the foggy streets of Mune as he mused, he was startled from his reflections by the gathering of sorcerers in the area. He had been learning to ignore the unmoving, horizontal forms of the sleeping citizenry that he could make out within the buildings he passed. But the ones he noted now were approaching. They were spread out over a wide area, closing some sort of search pattern, not quite converging on his location, but aware that he had to be somewhere within. "I should have chased down the survivors," Iridan said, cursing himself for laziness. While he had planned to continue his killings, he greatly preferred striking from ambush. Not only was it safer, but it was much more efficient at eliminating large numbers of Megrin troops quickly. He scanned about for stronger sources among the searchers to see if they had any sorcerers or blade priests among them. He would also look for large sources that would indicate they had gone back to trying stripe cats against him. He suspected not, since he had hardly seen any since his first night of raiding. The beasts were outrageously expensive to be thrown at Iridan to their near certain demise. And by the winds did those things have a lot of blood in them. There were indeed strong sources to be found among those intent on surrounding him. Three, in fact. A fourth was borderline, either just an unusually ether-strong soldier or a weakling sorcerer, Iridan picked one of the strong ones at random. He quickened his pace, heading straight for it. It would be best for him to engage them before there was a chance for the strong ones to join forces against him. A cry went up as Iridan's hellfire spell crashed into his chosen target, and everything within a dozen paces of it. Those not consumed by flames shouted things Iridan could not understand. After a moment's confusion, he could see that the rest of the searchers had begun closing on his location. A scattering of dead sources remained where his spell had hit, save for one that shone with the light of a shielding spell, and appeared to be stumbling around, either dazed or choking on the smoke from the corpses and two buildings that had been engulfed in the conflagration. Iridan ran to close the distance before the sorcerer could recover, wincing at the pain in his ribs as his lungs expanded. The fires had burned away the fog in an instant, so Iridan was crossing open ground as he neared his opponent. Arrows stung against his shield as Magrin archers among the patrols could now see him. Single arrows were little danger to him, but in the aggregate, they became a threat, wearing away at his shield and requiring him to draw more ether to strengthen it. A sorcerer straightened at Iridan's approach, and he could hear him choking on the first words to a spell. Dragon's Whisper put an end to that, though, carving the man in half neatly, at least as seen in the ether. Iridan ignored the spray of warm blood as he turned to seek out the archers who had harried his charge. Head-sized balls of flame shot from his hand in the direction of each he discovered. They were larger than the flaming darts he had used earlier, but he wanted to make sure that the bows were consumed in flame as well. With immediate threats destroyed, and more on the way, Iridan paused a moment to catch his breath and discovered his folly. The smoke from the many fires his magic had started was invisible in the ether, but he could feel the stinging in his eyes. When he tried to fill his lungs with air, he breathed it in. "Stupid," he thought, unable to draw breath enough to berate himself aloud. "I heard that Magrin coughing in it." Dropping to the ground and crawling away from the fires, his hacking, gasping coughs racked his injured ribs with agony. The onslaught began as the outlying members of the Magrin search team arrived in numbers. Seeing Iridan stricken and debilitated, they tried to finish him much as he had done with the sorcerer. From his hands and knees, Iridan swatted ineffectually with Dragon's Whisper as he was set upon by swordsmen, whose blows wore at his shielding spell anew. Iridan wished that it was Heaven's Cry he carried instead of the gift from Brannis. He liked the idea of just purging the city with the greenish, acidic fumes of Rashan's weapon. It would be like smoking out a hive of vermin, purging the city of Magrin and Cadran alike, but allowing it to begin anew, fresh and clean of infestation. Instead, Iridan fought to his feet as he cleared his lungs. Dragon's Whisper took little effort to wield, and against such foes as he faced, he required only a fraction of his attention as he worried more about his breathing. He batted aside their parrying blades as it snapped through the air like a serpent's strike. The impacts against his shield grew infrequent as he finished off one opponent after another, until he was breathing heavily again, suffering the stabbing pain in his ribs as the price that had to be paid for the victory. He had not had the presence of mind to keep lookout for the other two sources he had identified initially. When he found all foes within arm's reach dead around him, he noticed them again at last, bracketing the length of road he was standing on. There were only 10 paces or so between him and each of them. 2 more of the Blade Priests. He might have been able to make it to one of the narrow alleys to one side or the other between the houses that lined the road, but he was in no shape for running. Iridan stuck Dragon's Whisper into the ground at his feet and collapsed to one knee, using the blade for support. Tears streamed from the corners of his eyes, from the pain and from the smoke he had just escaped. If either of the Blade Priests was aware of Iridan beginning to make a concerted draw upon the ether, neither showed a sign.
"This is not an honorable death, demon spawn, to face you wounded and 2 against 1,
one of the Blade Priests said by way of apology in advance of finishing him. Iridan saw nothing but a source and a weapon.
The light is filled with distraction,
Rashan had told him.
Empathy worst of all. See a source, destroy a source. The voice might have been older, but the Safshan accent made guessing tricky. The source of the voice's owner was the weaker of the two, but only by a hair.
To slay Rashan in such a manner might be worthy of note, but to kill one such as you, we do our duty, and no more,
the other blade priest finished, summing up their statement. Iridan had realized his mistake with the first blade priest, engaging him in parley to no advantage. The fleeing soldiers had obviously spread the word that it was not Rashan Solaran rampaging through the nighttime streets of Mune. Though there was nothing more he might give away in banter, he was not going to repeat the error. Iridan said nothing, just waited, and drew more ether as they wasted time explaining their motives to a man they intended to live only a moment longer. They approached briskly, the middling ground between caution and a reckless charge. It seemed very professional by Iridan's estimation, good teamwork. It also showed a weakness of the Blade Priests, a clear lack of awareness of the ether as they fought. It seemed that they were not suited to fighting warlocks. Iridan let them get close, but not within reach of their rune blades. Twin blasts of ether hit the two men in the chest as Iridan thrust his arms out to either side, releasing his grip on Dragon's Whisper. They were tighter, more focused blasts than he'd had time to form in his earlier engagement when he was fighting in panic. Iridan found a new moment of panic, however, when the bolts did not stop his adversary's momentum. He threw himself backward to the ground as two corpses stumbled into one another with ragged, bloody holes through them. The impact with the ground nearly made Iridan black out in pain from his ribs. He felt one of the rune blades bounce off his shield, and another try to knife into his leg as it was caught between him and its former owner. Iridan felt a volley of arrows strike his shield, weakening it near the point of failing.
The archers had no reason to hold their fire now that the Blade Priests were no longer in danger.
Iridan drew more ether, realizing too late that the Blade Priest's newly dead ether was closest at hand. He strengthened his shield and shot more balls of fire, both at the archers and at any buildings within easy range. He needed time. The Magrin occupiers had shown that they would stop pursuit of him to attend to fires in the city. The chaos of the frightened peasants who would be flushed into the streets would help as well. Iridan pulled himself from beneath the pile of dead blade priests and retched. The feeling of the dead ether passing through his source had disgusted him. It was a sensation his body had been unaware it could experience. His stomach empty of its contents, Iridan wobbled to his feet,
retrieved Dragon's Whisper,
and set about to find his shelter for the daytime.
Very well, we will try your plan tomorrow night, General Rosen said, staring out into the night to watch the fires of Mune burning. I am sorry for the loss of your brothers.
A priest does not expect to die of age or sickness. To never be defeated is the wish of the vain, thinking that none is better, or luckier, or more worthy than they, Tiber replied.
He stood at the general's side, but did not look out at the burning city. His attention fixed on the general as a show of respect.
Do you really think it will work? You seem to assume much.
I study, to spend hours each day in sparring and meditation, and think oneself adequately prepared, ignores half the equation of combat. The study of foes is the other half. Understanding his training, his motives, his fears, and his vanities, that is the other half. I have read books, including one about this new warlock's father. I have reports from the battles he has fought in the city, both his ambushes and in the attack that slew Suka. I will have reports of tonight's battle if any survive to make one. I also have other sources of information that, with respect, General, are secret to my kind.
General Rosen nodded, satisfied that if the plan did not work, it was at least well thought out, and the planner was at greatest risk. Plans that were assembled by men who would be safely removed from battle were never as trustworthy as plans by men who would risk their own lives in trying them.
General Rosen did not think to ask what those secret sources of information were. He assumed they were secrets of Teba's brotherhood or blade priests. They were not. Iridan stumbled into the wine cellar of a nobleman's estate. He did not know which, and could hardly have cared less. The Magrin occupiers had leveled a great many of the wealthier estates, places that could have been used by generals, sorcerers, and even the accursed blade priests, who counted among their own elite. Part of the ceiling was caved in, but a comfortably large space remained, smelling of the grape. Iridan had swept away the broken glass and burned off the spilled wine, making it into a hideaway for the hours when Magrin and peasant alike would be stalking the streets of Mune. He had brought in blankets and some pilfered foods to hold him over for a few days. He could always loot more from either the occupiers or the peasants. His aching body needed rest, and lots of it. "Maybe I will rest tomorrow night as well," Iridan told himself. He knew that he would not. The drive to save the city kept him out in the streets each night, every death bringing the city closer to freedom. Iridan uncorked a bottle of a vintage he had never heard of. Wine was all the same to him, whether it was of ancient vintage or last season's grape juice. He just needed to get drunk enough to fall into a dreamless sleep. He half succeeded. He found himself stalking the streets as he had on his first nights in Mune. He dodged among the buildings, facing off against stripe cats and infantry patrols. Nothing hurt in the dream. Not when the headless stripe cat collapsed atop him momentarily. Not when he landed awkwardly jumping from a third-story rooftop to pursue a fleeing Magrin captain. Every opponent he faced off against fell either by blade or spell. He found himself bereft of opposition,
and decided to find shelter and respite.
The dream fatigue felt real enough. Everything slowed to where he felt like he was wading through honey. He needed rest. A peasant home caught his eye. It opened onto an unremarkable street, and from its look, likely had a loft where he could hide. Blade still in hand in case of ambush,
he used a bit of telekinesis to flip the bar that held it firm against intruders.
The dream was in the light, so Iridan could not see the occupants within, but he remembered them from what had happened to him in the waking world. The husband and wife within had been awakened by the throwing of the bolt, and had both come to investigate. The man carried a wooden axe, the woman a small knife. "I am Warlock Iridan. You have nothing to fear from me. I seek shelter as I drive out the Magrin soldiers," he said to them. They looked at him with fearful eyes, seeing a black-clad swordsman, dripping blood all over their floors, and with a readied blade in hand.
"Leave us alone. We want no trouble here," the man shouted at him.
"Be quiet," Iridan ordered, trying to sound authoritative, but in the dream it came out with a savage growl.
"Mommy, what's going on?"
A voice from above. There had indeed been a loft in the house, and the young girl of perhaps 6 or 7 winters leaned her head over the edge to see. When she did, she screamed. It was the shrill, piercing note that only the very young and the very frightened can manage. Iridan panicked. He needed stealth and refuge, safe from further discovery by the occupiers until he had rested. His hand acted before he could think enough to stop it. A little girl's head dropped to the floor. In the dream, it kept screaming.